Welcome back, everybody. This is Sight to the Blind. I'm aware that some of you enjoyed, well, most of you enjoyed, I'm pretty sure, my last guest on this show. It was a great interview. But let me break this down so you can understand. Anytime I have a disagreement with any guest on my show, I do not confront them about the information. I understand that we all in this walk at different stages, and we all have different understandings and different ways and how we see things, especially in scripture. Even though it says don't lean on your own understanding, for some of us, we are the only understanding that we have. And we have to find out how we can navigate ourselves through scripture, even if we come across people who are following something completely different. The point of this show is that when I bring guests on, I am not going to combat them on what they believe and what they follow. That's not my role. I want them to share their walk, share their journey. I don't want to get into what these camps get into on the street, which is finding out people to debate. I'm not doing that. This show is not set up for me to debate people. Because at the end of the day, I understand people are going to follow what they want to follow. And I relate this to myself. Even if somebody told me, hey, this is the truth, I would at first be like, nah, this ain't it. And then I end up eventually falling into it, another doctrine. And then I'm going around in circles because I placed all my faith on men that I thought knew what they were doing or knew what they were talking about. But when someone mentions something that I've heard from another interview, then I got to bring out an understanding so everybody knows what I'm talking about and the reason why I don't move away from the things that I follow or the things that Yahuwah has shown me. And one of those things is this Dead Sea Scrolls. This is the second brother I've heard, and this is nothing about him. This is not a debate or a sneak diss at him. This is about the information that I've been seeing come across my face or come across my ears more than once. So the reason why those who follow the Saturday Shabbats is because they say, not from scripture, they say it's because of the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's what's validating the Saturday Shabbats. That's what's validating the spring equinox as a starting point. It's not Yah's word. It's the Dead Sea Scrolls. So I'm going to go into again, and hopefully somebody can find some correction. Because if you're not being corrected in the Ruach, I don't know what to tell you. So let's go to Enoch 104, 8 through 9. They shall speak evil things. They shall utter falsehood and create a great creation and compose Sepharim in their own words. But when they shall write all my words correctly in their own languages, they shall neither change or diminish them, but shall write them all correctly, all which from the first I have uttered concerning them. Now, the second part of that information that I've heard multiple times is that new moon and month have been mistranslated. Okay, even if you mistranslate new moon to month to whatever you want to call it. If I go by Enoch chapter 78, he clarifies that the month, new moon, the beginning of the month, is based on the moon having light received upon it, which is the first day. That's the definition of what the starting of the month is. If you are on a Saturday Shabbat only, you are not doing the months according to the moon. Even though we can have the same back and forth conversation about, oh, it's going to be 10 days short because it's only going to be 354. And I said this before multiple times. We did not change the Most High's calendar. Even in Enoch, it says in the time of sinners, the years should pass more speedily. That means the moon is going to change its laws. Did we change the moon's laws? No. Did we cut the 10 days from 364? No, we did not. We didn't do anything to this calendar. We are all coming back to it at a time where time is speeding fast. So going by the moon and the sun, we are going to be always 10 days short. But when you move the creation story to the spring equinox and then start the calendar there, regardless if it's a 365 day or 366 leap year, which we are still in, if you move it there, the Saturday Shabbats are always on Saturday. It don't move. So what my understanding is, you're not able to do new moons on that calendar. You're not able to do what's mentioned in Numbers 10. Numbers chapter 10 talks about that we should make silver trumpets and blow them at our ascending offerings, smoke offerings, mingled with flour and wine at the beginning of our months. Now, what months are you following that start with the Saturday being the seventh day? Are you using the Gregorian calendar? What months are you, what's your the beginning of your months that it, that let, that lands Saturday on its Shabbat every Saturday? How? How are you counting those days? If you're, then you don't have any moons. You're not doing Numbers chapter 10. That's what I found out. I found out that that new moon, the beginning of the months, are like Shabbats. And I think the Most High made new moons like Shabbats, as it's mentioned closely related to each other in scripture or in the same verses, is because he wants you to understand that this is the starting point of how you count to your Shabbat. Let's go to scripture. Since that's how we should be validated. Amos 8, 4 and 5. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail, saying, when will the new moon be gone, that we may sell grain, and the Shabbat, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balances by deceit? Now, it says, again, new moon right by Shabbat. So if you couldn't sell on the new moon, and just like you can't sell and buy on the Shabbat, they are closely related because new moons are treated like Shabbats. I have not yet seen any post of brothers and sisters in the truth talking about new moon Shabbats or new moon festivals, new moon feast days, new moon celebrations. Regardless of how you translate month and new moon, those two verses are mentioned. Those verses are mentioned with each, those words are mentioned with each other when he talks about new moons, Shabbats. I'll make them forget my new moons and Shabbats. That's in the book of Hosea. But in this, if I was only following the solar calendar, I would change those verses and be like, it ain't new moons no more. It's just Shabbats. And I've pointed this out many times, and when I was on this track to find out what calendar we should be on, because I want everybody to find out themselves and be open. Your heart has to be uncircumcised. Like it says in scripture, you're uncircumcised, the foreskin of your heart. Your heart has to be open to start receiving new information. Especially when it's being laid out this form. I'm not on here just making up my own doctrine and making up my own words. I'm just going to what they show me. I'm going to what the prophets, with David, with Enoch, what Yah has said. I'm not coming into this on my own. Like Sirach or Ecclesiasticus 4, 6 through 8. He made the moon also to serve in her season for a declaration of times and a sign of the world. From the moon is the sign of feast, a light that decreases in her perfection. If her light is decreasing, that means it's on the back, it's getting ready to be on the backside of the full moon. If the moon is a sign of feast, that means the moon is full. If it's decreasing in her perfection, her perfected state has to be the full moon. And when does the full moon come? Well, to me, if I'm following new moon Shabbats and new moon feast days, a new moon calendar, that means the 14th day is when the moon is full, which is a Shabbat for me, the 14th day. And when he said it's the sign of feast, if you go through the three major feasts of Yahuwah, they're all on full moon days. Pesach starts on the 14th. At evening, the moon is going to be full. When you count the Feast of Weeks, if you count the, I think it was, what, seven, is it 49 something, or it was 7 weeks or something like that? If you count that, it'll end you back on the full moon being on the 14th, where the moon is full. 14 to 15, when the moon is full. If you go into Sukkot, that's months later, the seventh month. When does it start? Does it start on the 8th or 9th? Does it start on the 6th? Does it start on the 3rd? No, it's on the 15th. Why do you think that is? Because it's a full moon. There are three major feasts, which are the signs from the moon being full, is the Feast of Yahuwah. The month is called after her name, increasing wonderfully in her changing, being an instrument of the armies above, shining in the expanse of heaven. The month is called after her name. The month is called after her name, increasing wonderfully. This is the definition that backs up what Enoch's definition of the new moon is, when the light is first received upon it. But this is the scriptures that I've said before, I made videos about before. Yet I keep hearing what the Dead Sea Scrolls say. And I said this about the Dead Sea Scrolls. I said, you have to have a little bit more understanding of where the biblical lands actually are. You have to know where real biblical Yasharel happened. It did not happen in Palestine. It did not happen in the Qumran caves. It did not happen in Iraq or Iran. It did not happen in Babylon and Saudi Arabia. This is the reason why I give you David Rumsey's map collection, so you could go down that path to find out where these biblical cities are and do the searching for yourself. Do the investigating for yourself. This is why I do it. This is what the Dead Sea Scroll says about his calendar. His unbroken rhythm meant, furthermore, that the first day of the year and each subsequent season always fell on the same day of the week. For the Essenes, this was Wednesday, since according to Genesis 1, 14 and 19, 14 through 19, it was on the fourth day that the sun and the moon were created. Needless to add, the same monotonous sequence also implied that all the feasts of the year always fell on the same day of the week. Passover, the 15th day of the first month, was always celebrated on a Wednesday. The Feast of Weeks, the 15th day of the third month, always on a Sunday. The Day of Atonement, the 10th day of the seventh month, on a Friday. That's completely wrong if you wanted to back that up with scripture. Because why would David say, blow the trumpet or the shofar at the dark new moon, and when the moon is full on our feast day? If you look at the moons at all of these weeks, it's all over the place. And they don't even say Yah. It says the Essenes did it this way. That means they start their first day of the week on Sunday. That's why every year is always the same Shabbat on the same day of the week. Because you're using Sunday, solar day, pagan Sunday. And I'll get into later who the Essenes were. But this is what I don't get, how a lot of you are following this Dead Sea Scroll calendar. Especially when the Essenes aren't mentioned nowhere in scripture. And it doesn't say in Enoch that we should use Genesis 1, 14 through 19 to resolve the calendar. But like I said, people do have like some type of, they break out in some type of rash, I'm assuming, if they have to be accountable for being wrong or to not look at the information clearly. It's like, ah, oh, no, I'm still on this way. I'm comfortable in this wave. Now I'm doing it this way. There is nothing in scripture that told us to point our way to the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were found in 1946 to 1947. Why was that so pivotal? It's because Israel was trying to validate that Palestine was biblical lands. So let me break it down like this. If you have a Maybach that you have had all your life, beautiful, a beautiful Maybach, chrome wheels, two-tone, plush leather seats, entertainment center in the back, you've worked all your life on this car, adding all the bells and whistles. That's your baby, your pride and joy. Now me, I'm about to get kicked out of my land. I need somewhere to go. I don't have a car. I don't have a car. I want that car that you got. If I have everybody on my side feeling sorry for me because I have no car, all I needed to do to tell everybody that this is that your car is my car is, let me slip in something personable of mine. So everybody that feels sorry for me for not having a car can see that your car is mine because what I left in your car belongs to me. This is what they did to the Dead Sea Scrolls. They told you they found these works in Palestine a year before the Balfour Declaration in order to validate that this was the real biblical land because they didn't have any other real biblical ties to that land. Everybody knows, or if you actually did some real research, that that's not Jerusalem. That's Fort Antonia. It is a Roman fort that King Herod built up the wall that they wail at. He built that wall up. That's the building they sieged. It is not the building they tore up in 70 AD. If you read Yirmiyahu 9:11, it talks about Jerusalem being desolate, without inhabitant, infested with jackals. Where can you find jackals? In Africa, native to Africa, which is southern Namibia, where today is still desolate. There is a map that our brother found from the Roman Catholic Church that seeped out that shows the real lay of Jerusalem, the temple and everything. And he superimposed it over southern Namibia, where you can still see where it was, the rocks and things were kind of bordered around how it was burnt. They found this map, and it matches so perfectly over this shape in southern Namibia. So when someone says it's the Dead Sea Scrolls that told me to change this calendar, all I had to do was look up, okay, let me just Google Dead Sea Scrolls. And it comes up as a book by Geza Vermes, which is a Jew. It says the manuscripts found in the Qumran caves dating from about 200 BC to AD 70 are associated with the Essene sect. The Essene sect. Who are the Essenians? I have not found Essenians in scripture. I found Pharisees, Sadducees, Herodians, but I have not found Essenians in scripture, which is what you need to do to understand why you follow the calendars that you follow, is to look in the information deeper than what you just hear on the news. Oh, it's the Dead Sea Scrolls. That's our books. Oh, it has to be because the Jews got it. That has to be for us. So let me go into a couple of definitions of the Essenes. are what I've found to be the definitions of Essenes. Essenes, according to Britannica.com, Essene, a member of a religious sect or brotherhood that flourished in Palestine from about the 2nd century BC to the end of the 1st century AD. Genesis Apocryphon, pseudepigraphical work not accepted in any canons of scripture, one of the most important works of the Essene community of Jews, part of whose library was discovered in 1947 in caves of Qumran near the Dead Sea in Palestine. So this whole calendar, as I pour through the Dead Sea Scrolls, is attributed to the Essenian sect, which are Jews. Are they Israelites? I doubt it. I haven't seen any connections to any biblical tribe that had anything to do with the Essene sect. This is Samael on Weor, which is a follower of whatever he, like a Gnostic follower out of South America or whatever. He says, and he's quoted in his books, The Revelation of Beelzebub, 1950. He says the system of teaching, which was adopted by Jesus, was the system of the Essenes. Certainly, the Essenes were 100% Gnostics. Was Yahusha a Gnostic? No. But to them, Jesus being the sun god, being a bastard child of a Roman soldier who fell into Egypt to learn magic, the same Jesus that they say is bubbling in hot shit in the Talmud, that's the Jesus they're talking about. They talking about that allegory. They talking about that symbolism of Jesus Christ. That's the story that they're talking about. That the European Jesus they know came from a Roman soldier who fled into Egypt to learn the biblical, but the Egyptian mystery schools, and became a magician, and that's how he was curing and healing folks. This is the man that's the story of the Talmud, not Yahusha. Another quote, previously, we were the mystical Essenes of Palestine, so we are not improvising opportunist doctrine. So we are not improvising opportunist doctrines. We were hidden for 20 centuries, but now we are returning once again to the street in order to carry on our shoulders the old, rough, and heavy cross. Same guy, The Major Mysteries is his book. The philosophy of sexual alchemy has its principles in the school of the Essenes and the school of Alexandria and the teachings of Pythagoras and the mysteries of Egypt, Troy, Rome, Carthage, Eleusis, as well as in the wisdom of the Aztecs and Mayas, etc. Same guy, his book called The Aquarian Message. To me, it's starting to sound a little bit like Freemasonry, don't you think? If Essenes are a sect of a brotherhood, which means there ain't no women in this sect. That means I'm pretty sure if I dig deeper, I can find out rituals and rites that make sense to me to equate them to Freemasonry or the start of what would be Freemasonry. Because Freemasonry is nothing but a combination of mystery schools from biblical days and times and just fused into different organizations to see which one survived. Here's another one about the Essenes that's mentioned in the Dead Sea Scrolls as being the catalyst for the spring equinox creation story. The Essenes, their history and doctrines, the Kabbalah, its doctrines, development, and literature by Christian David Ginsburg, 1831 to 1914. I'm not going to read all of it, but you can find it on archive.org. Page 6. The design of this essay is to give an impartial statement of the doctrines and practices of the Essenes, to show their rise and progress, their relationship both to Judaism and Christianity, their numbers and localities to trace the most probable signification of their name. To do this, I not only appeal to the seven stereotyped witnesses, but to the information upon this subject scattered throughout the Midrashim and the Talmud, but not to incur the charge of partiality, as well as to enable you to test my conclusion. I have collected all that the ancients have written upon this subject and append to this paper the whole account which Philo, Pliny, Josephus, Salinas, Porphyry, Eusebius, and Athenaeus give of the Essenes. So, of course, almost every Jewish historian uses Josephus without fail. Anytime you hear anything about biblical antiquity from a European, you're going to hear Josephus' name come up. Let me go another one I found. The history of Freemasonry, the antiquities, symbols and constitutions, customs, etc., embracing an investigation of the records of the organizations of the fraternity in England, Scotland, Ireland, British colonies, France, Germany, and the United States. Derived from official sources by Robert Freke Gould, barrister at law, past senior grand deacon of England, author of the Four Old Lodges. page 29. The assertion of Josephus that they live in the same kind of life as do those whom the Greeks call Pythagoreans. Right? That's a second witness that has mentioned the Essenes with the Pythagoreans, which is mathematics. If you don't know what the Pythagorean theorem is and who Pythagoras was, he created, or matter of fact, go watch Donald Duck Magic Mathland, where they basically tell you with the pentagram and shapes and numbers that Pythagoras created this, his own male fraternity about math. And they were called the Pythagoreans. Has led some writers to believe that the Essenes is the offspring of Pythagorism. So that would make sense why it's about spring equinoxes, it's about math, it's about the cosmos, the stars, the zodiac signs, all these things that the Most High created, man has manipulated into his own doctrine to say this is what we should follow. When it's not mentioned in scripture that we should ever pay attention to the zodiac signs. There's only a class of stars that are ever mentioned in scripture. But the Babylonians are the one. The Chaldeans are the ones who created what we have now is what we call the zodiac signs. That the Essenes worshiped the sun, believed in intermediate beings between the deity and the world, and devoted themselves to magic arts outside the boundaries of their miraculous cures. I'll read that again. That the Essenes worshiped the sun, believed in intermediate beings between the deity and the world, and devoted themselves to magic arts. They are a Jewish mystic sect. Since when did the Most High give his authority over to the Essenes to correct his calendar, to correct his luminaries? Where is that scripture? In doctrine as well as practice, the Essenes and the Pharisees were nearly alike. I repeat again, in doctrine as well as practice, the Essenes and the Pharisees were nearly alike. In both systems, there were four classes of Levitical purity. A novitiate of 12 months, an apron was bestowed in the first year, and the mysteries of the cosmogony and the cosmology were only revealed to members of the society. This sounds like Freemasonry or a start of Freemasonry. So this is why, regardless if it was the Gregorian calendar, regardless if it was a leap year in the Gregorian calendar, regardless if it's the Essenes calendar, your Shabbat is always on Saturday. That does not make sense to me. How can that make sense to you? If I'm pointing out three distinct different calendars and three distinct different years, how can they all end up on Saturday? How was that the seventh day? It makes no sense to me. And only thing that people have given me as far as information is just the Dead Sea Scrolls. They show me zodiac signs. They show me how the moon phases are all over the place. That you actually got to go outside every single day to make it make sense to why the Shabbats are on Saturday. And you have no moon, new moons. You have no festivals and feast days of the new moon, even though it's mentioned in scripture. It even states, let no man judge you on meat or drink when it's a new moon or a feast day. That means it's a party on a new moon and it's a party on a feast day. It's a celebration at the beginning of the months, like it's mentioned in Numbers 10, when we give our ascending smoke offerings. Is any of you who are following the Saturday Shabbat, are you doing new moon offerings? Are you doing what is mentioned in Numbers 10? Because that's what it says for the generation forever. From generation to generation, this is what we should be observing. How are you able to be correct? How are you able to serve the Most High if you are not doing new moon Shabbats along with new moon feast days and new moon smoke offerings? How can you say you are following the way? I've said this before many a times on two platforms now. I said it on TikTok. I said it on Sight to the Blind. And yes, I've been wrong. But I have told you I'm wrong. I told you, hey, I'm wrong for following Nick Vanderland's calendar. I'm wrong for that. Or I'm wrong for leading you into Become Set Apart's calendar. I'm wrong for that. I'm wrong for miscalculating it's 28 or 29 days, but it's really 29 to 30 days. I'm telling you, I'm being wrong, outwardly wrong in front of you, so you do not be, you don't need to be afraid of correction when you have to do it yourself. There's no shame in correcting yourself, but do it before other people do it for you. That's how you stay humble in His word. Humble and righteous, to know that you're not always going to be 100% right and that you don't do it out of maliciousness. You just do it out of ignorance, or sometimes you do it just out of vanity because you think you're right. But this is how the Ruach checks us. That is important. I'll go to the same book. I'll go to page 27. According to tradition, there were 4 degrees of purity. See, there we go. The Essene sect have 4 degrees. When they start talking about degrees, you know exactly what I'm talking about. According to tradition, there were 4 degrees of purity. The ordinary purity required of every worshiper in the temple. The higher degree of purity necessary for eating of the heave offering. The still higher degree requisite for partaking of the sacrifices. And the degree of purity required of those who sprinkle the water absolving from sin. The first degree was obligatory upon everyone. The other grades were voluntary. The strictness of the ceremonial law, thus rendered still more rigid by traditional explanations, ultimately led to their forming a separate community. They practiced celibacy, although weak brethren were allowed to take wives, which, however, debarred them from advancement to higher orders of the brotherhood. Now, we read we came across 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 1 through 3, haven't we? Now, the Ruach speaks expressly that in the latter times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing Ruach and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry and commanding to abstain from food, which Elohim has created to be received with thanksgiving of them which believe and know the truth. Forbidding to marry. Now, what do they do when they get in these little Freemasonry cliques? Why do you think in Freemasonry and all those who are attached in Hollywood to Freemasonry, why do you think they go through periodical divorces? Why do you think they set these couples up and then 13 years later, they divorcing? It's a phallic brotherhood. It's a dick swinging party. They don't like the institution of marriage. If it's a brotherhood, they don't want anybody to have wives. They'll do it because they want you ignorant black folk in the black community to adhere to the images of what you think a righteous marriage is. That's why they give you these examples. And then they watch you and they corrupt them, manipulate them, and break them apart in front of your face. So you sit back and say, I will never find a man. I will never find a woman. Matter of fact, I will never like my kind because the images of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. I don't like this type of relationship because I'm looking at Jonathan Majors and Megan Good. I don't like this type of particular image that they set up because they've given me Cardi B and whatever his name is. This is all by design of what Freemasonry is. They want you to give up on love and start loving your same gender. That's what they want. They want the bros to stay with the bros. They want the sisters to stay with the sisters. And some of you too ignorant, you keep falling for it every single time they give you a new image. But I'm telling you, through these old school biblical, not biblical sects, like Pharisees and Sadducees, this is what they wanted to do. This is what they've been doing. Trying to create a major organization with just men because they homos. From the Romans to the Greeks to Sodom and Gomorrah, homos. That's what they wanted. And matter of fact, this is what Satan wants for them because they know the Most High can't stand homosexuality. That he know that all that he's seen, he came down and burnt up a whole city. Matter of fact, he burnt up two cities over homosexuality. He knows exactly what the Most High hate. So he's like, well, if I got these men to play with, oh, I'm going to create an organization, a fraternity, a brotherhood. So they only fall in love with each other. So then they can implement this all around the world. Why do you think Rat Crews had all these men and then one female? All these rap crews we heard, we seen. Including me being around one of them. It was nothing but men. Why do you think all these rap beefs and these rap crews were just all men? And they were just sprinkling a couple of women here and there. Just so you wouldn't get suspicious. The Rough Riders. Fam, you even hear those songs? Down bottom. Do you bust your gun? Hell yeah, I bust my gun. Do you bust them till they come? Do y'all hear these lyrics in these songs? Listen to DMX. As much as he talked about homosexuality or against gay folks, listen to his songs. Listen to the second round knockout, Cannabis's diss to LL Cool J. He says, you don't have the skills to eat a nigga's ass like me. Do y'all not understand the programming that works on us? Do you understand what we are susceptible, always susceptible to following doctrines that go against the Most High? Because we don't vet anything. If it seems comfortable for us to do, we will do it. If it doesn't make us feel shame, if it doesn't change us too much, if it makes us stay out of the way where we make sure we're right, we will do that. But this walk is not meant for us to bask in the glory all the time if we are not following his law, statutes, commandments. Now, he is merciful with us because he knows exactly who we are. He knows exactly how stiff-necked we are and how haughty-minded we are. He knows this. But it says in scripture, I will correct you in measure, so I will not leave you altogether unpunished. So instead of that belt, that hand, that foot coming out of us, he may do a belt here. He may do his hand here. He may give us an attaboy in the middle, but he's going to correct us in measure. There were no distinctions amongst them, and they had all things in common. They were governed by a president who was elected by the whole body. Trials were conducted by juries composed of at least 100 members who had to be unanimous in their verdict. All of this sounds like Freemasonry. All of it sounds like Freemasonry. And they say, as I did my research, that the Essenes are mentioned multiple times in the Talmud. And it even mentioned in Israelite scripture or Hebrew scripture. So how are they sprinkled all over the Talmud? Did not Yahuwah say in Jubilees that they will follow after the other nations, after their error, after their ignorance? This is what's important, and this is why I had to talk about it. I'm saying it's no disrespect to the brother I had on my show. It's no disrespect. I'm only attacking the information because it's the second time somebody has mentioned Dead Sea Scrolls to me. And then mentioned also that the definitions somehow usurps what I just read to you in scripture. I just read the definitions of what that is. And I said this before I had any guest on my show about calendars. I said, I understand why most people do Saturday Shabbats because you do not work. It's easy to do. It's every day. Every Saturday, you just know. Oh, I know I'm a prepare. You don't do no real calculation. You don't look up at the moon, no nothing. It's a straight run on. It's a run on Shabbat. Every Saturday, you know. And you know you don't have to work. Most of you don't have to work on Saturdays. So it's easy for you to do. It's easy to be happy and joy and full of love on a day you know you won't have to do nothing. But some of you who have fought, who are using the moon also, you know how shameful it makes you feel, how embarrassed it makes you feel that you come up on a month where your Shabbat just happens to be on a day you work. But that's the point. The point is to when you have to come upon these days of a set apart day and you have to do something or have to work, it makes you hate this place even more. It makes you not want to be here. That's the whole point of us waking up and coming back to his truth, not the truth of the Dead Sea Scrolls, but his truth. It would make us uncomfortable to be in this space that we're in. That's the whole point of the awakening, is to hate to be around this system. That you can't properly worship the Most High and exalt his name because you got to do something for this system. That's what hating the world and not loving it means. That's why he says, love not the world or the things that are part of this world. Because when you find doctrines that'll make you love not only this world, but love to do its doctrines on his schedule, there's no pressure. There's no change. It's nothing but compromise. And one of the things I happened to find out, which is very interesting to me when we're talking about biblical lands, is in Jubilees 8, Jubilees 8:19, it says, and he knew that the Garden of Eden is the Holy of Holies and the dwelling of Yahuwah, and Mount Sinai, the center of the desert, and Mount Zion, the center of the navel of the earth. These three were created as holy places facing each other. Now, my woman brought this to my attention because she said, well, Mount Sinai is also called Mountain of the Moon. So I said, send that over to me. So it says in the Bible, Mount Sinai is sometimes referred to as the Mountain of the Moon because its name may come from Sin, the ancient Mesopotamian moon deity. The other mountain in the Bible that is sometimes mentioned is Mount Horeb, which may be called the Mountain of the Sun because its name may mean glowing heat or dry place, which could be a reference to the sun. But anyway, Mount Sinai and them being in the wilderness of Sin. Now, when it says it's sometimes called the Mountain of the Moon, did you know in the middle of Africa. It's on biblical maps. It says mountains of the moon. Plural, mountains of the moon. It stretches in the middle of Central Africa. Close to where, if you look at old ancient maps, there's in North Africa a goddess, A-G-A-D-E-S. That, if you look that up, is the Akkadian Empire. If you go deeper than that name, it's the Assyrian Empire. If you go deeper than that name, that's the Mesopotamian Empire. In order for it to be the Mesopotamian Empire, that means Babylon, a.k.a. Shumer, a.k.a. Sumer, a.k.a. the Sumerians, a.k.a. Sinar or Shinar, as is mentioned in scripture, must be close by. So if you do your due work, you do your due diligence, you would find that Mesopotamia is in North Africa, Northwest Africa, and Babylon is in East Africa. And you got mountains of the moon in between those two destinations. So it makes sense to me that the real Mount Sinai is not where they say it is, because that's not really in the middle of the desert. Now, mountains of the moon is in the middle of the desert. And on the backside of that is the wilderness of Sin. So this is what I'm diving into. But this is where my research is leading me. It's leading me that I should be paying attention to Africa. Now, me, I'm not asking anybody else to do this, but me, my seasons aren't even total. My spring equinoxes, I'm not following that. My seasons aren't American seasons as it relates to my calendar. My calendar is based on Africa's seasons. Even though I can't use the moons in Africa, I mean, I really can, because obviously the time difference. But I'm showing the Most High. I'm trying to get as close to the dock I can of America to know I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go. I'm showing the Most High, hey, if you want to pick me up, you could pick me up at the edge of America. That's where I'm at. With my calendar, that's where I'm at. So that's why I'm not getting on anybody for if they follow something completely different. But I'm making myself uncomfortable to try to fit my calendar as the seasons of Africa, because that's where the biblical lands is. That's where everything in biblical happened. So if you want to talk about the Feast of Hanukkah, it says it happened in the winter. Did it happen in American winter? No, it did not. Because American's winter is completely different than Africa's winter. They're reversed. So that's what my calendar reflects. Africa. When they went into slavery, they didn't go to America. I mean, mind you, except for this one. When they went into slavery to multiple nations, they didn't go all the way over to India, or they didn't go all the way over to Canada, or all the way up to Russia. Medai or Persia, Babylon, the Assyrian, Ashashur, when he was king, they were in North Africa. They went to North Africa, Central Africa, East Africa. And some went into Greece. Which is, I mean, it's far, but And then he brought Greece and Romans into Jerusalem for punishment as well. But they knew exactly where their lands were. They knew exactly the seasons. It was easy to follow the moon there because they didn't go to a place where they were far removed from their moon. That's why it's important to do research on where the land is. So you stop falling for every little thing that comes out of that fake land. That has the Essenes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees have nothing to do with us. And it shouldn't have nothing to do with how we coordinate our calendar. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to say this five more times for people to get it. But that's why the scripture talks heavily about correction. Do you have the Ruach to be corrected? My son, Proverbs 3, 11, 13. Proverbs 3, 11 through 13. My son, despise not the chastening of Yahuwah, neither be weary of his correction. For whom Yahuwah loves, he corrects, even as a father the son in whom he delights. Happy is the man that finds wisdom and the man that gets understanding. Job 5, 17, 18. Behold, happy is the man whom Elohai corrects. Therefore, despise not you the chastening of El Shaddai, for he makes sore and binds up. He wounds and his hands make whole. Yes, he will hurt our spirits, hurt our ruach. Yes, he will bring our ruach or our continence low. That's the only way we know how to correct ourselves, is to feel a little bit of shame. I have felt more than my share of a little bit of shame, especially doing these calendars and following all these people and not asking the Most High myself of how to put me on the right track. And that's what I started doing. After being shamed and feeling embarrassment, I said, you know what? I'm not moving, y'all. I am not moving until you make me move. If you want me to observe this calendar or observe your feast days and set apart days, which you asked for us to do, put me on that track. Put me where you need me to be. And this is how I ended up doing my seasons as Seasons of Africa and why I do my calendar the way I do it. I didn't change it from 364 to 354 based on the moon. I have no power over that. But he knows I'm searching for him. I'm searching for him to move me along to maybe I get correction about those 10 days. And maybe those 10 days are reserved to come back in the calendar for the 10 days of plagues on Egypt. I don't know. Or maybe the 10 plagues or something. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not trying to guess the Most High's plan. But I'm asking him to move me personally. And not by man. Not by doctrine. Hebrews 12, 9 through 11. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of the Ruach and live? For they truly for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure. But he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now, no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. 2 Timothy 3:16. All scripture is given by the Ruach Elohim and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. Sirach 16:12. As his mercy is great, so is his correction also. He judges a man according to his works. Jeremiah 2:19. Your own wickedness shall correct you, and your backsliding shall reprove you. Know therefore, and see that it is an evil thing and bitter that you have forsaken Yahuwah Elohaka, and that my fear is not in you, says Adonai Yahuwah Sabaoth. Jeremiah 5:3. O Yahuwah, are not your eyes upon the truth? You have stricken them, but they have not grieved. You have consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. They have refused to return. This has always been our problem. We so lovingly and easily want to follow everybody else, but we never go to the Most High and say, is this where we should go? But you shall say unto them, this is a nation that obeys not the voice of Yahuwah Elohim, nor receives correction. Truth is perished and is cut off from their mouth. Yirmiyahu. And I'm going to finish up with this. And what we all should be saying as a short prayer. O Yahuwah, correct me, but with judgment, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Now, this is the end of part one, and I'm going to talk about that correction that most are dying to see in anger. They dying to see the Most High correct them in anger because of the blasphemy they say out their mouths calling the Most High's works myths, or calling his name a Canaanite deity.